At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding, whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. This week's podcast is sponsored by Clover and Bee. Clover and Bee wax wraps are an eco-friendly alternative to single-use plastics, made using organic food-grade materials and products with our own in-house designs. With just a little warmth from your hands, they will easily mould around fruits, vegetables, snacks and sandwiches, as well as bowls and dishes, and will keep your food fresh for longer. Lasting approximately a year, they are easily cleaned using cool water and a little dish soap. At the end of their use, they can be re-waxed, composted, roused in strips as a chemical-free fire starter for log burners and barbecues. I've been extremely lucky to be able to use the Clover and Bee beeswax wraps, and my favourite thing is that I can chop up an onion, chop up an avocado, chop up a pepper, and I don't need to worry about food waste, and it's absolutely brilliant. I also really hate using cling film, and this has just been amazing so that I can keep things wrapped, keep things fresh, not have to worry about the environmental impact, and also my fridge looks so pretty. So please head over to Clover and Bee Goods on Instagram and you'll be able to find them and all of their beautiful designs just in time for Christmas, because this is an absolutely perfect gift. Today I am joined by Dr. Camilla Irvin. When I first met Camilla, I knew her as a body image researcher, but what I've come to realise is that Camilla researches so much more. This week, we really focus in on the pressures surrounding Christmas in terms of eating disorders and body image. And we also think about those that may not have the support of a family and how we can support ourselves during this festive season. I really hope that this is an informative episode for you and that you get lots of takeaways to use during the festive season.
So I'm at Northumbria today, so I'm like back to my playground.
Okay. Oh, nice. Exciting. What are you doing there?
So me and another Northumbria graduate, she's at Teesside now, she's doing a project on altered eating. So it's about the experiences of like chewing food and difficulties with eating, quite often due to things like illness, cancer, that sort of thing. So yeah, there is a bit of development of a tool to measure difficulties going on. So we've been doing a lot of like consultation and workshops and focus groups with people, like doing like all of the groundwork to create this tool. So yeah, I came over and basically it's doing research with your mates, right?
Nice. Yeah, sounds like a really nice way to spend the day.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And then we're going to go get lunch after this.
Oh, cool. Oh, well, no, I don't want to keep you too long. Amazing. Yeah. No, that sounds really interesting. What I love about you as well is, and I'm finding this more and more that I talk to researchers, you're like, oh, so what's your research interest? And then you do like things off of your research interest as well. And like, you know, it's never like, this is my one, you know, when someone does a PhD, yeah, this is my one specific thing and this is what I do. But yeah, in research, it doesn't feel like that.
Mm-mm. I'm a jack of all trades. Jack of all trades, master of none. I like all sorts of things and I get involved with all sorts of things. So, yeah, I think if you do too much of the same research, you stop seeing the big picture. And especially with something like body image, it is such a massive picture. So you have to continuously be keeping an eye on everything else that could be potentially related to it. Because otherwise you're just going to end up in your echo chamber, really. So it's...
Yeah. Exactly.
It's not possible in body image. Like, if you say, like, oh, I'm a body dissatisfaction researcher, it's like, there is so much around that topic that you can't just say, oh, I'm just body dissatisfaction, body image. Like, that you have to inevitably go into things like movement and eating disorders and parenting and media and all of that stuff. So it's, by the nature of body image being multidimensional, you have to be multidimensional. But then on top of that, because it's not like I did my undergrad on a non-body image or eating disorder related topic. I did my master's on something that wasn't related to those things. So I have other interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. There are other parts of me.
Yeah.
And I mean, what you've just done there sets us so nicely up for this week's episode. I think in so many different ways, because obviously we're going to be talking about body image, but then also the intersectionality with Christmas, with religion, with sexuality, but also I see it as, like, you know, normally on the podcast, or I think what people do at Christmas time is they're like, okay, how to cope with an eating disorder at Christmas, which is fine and that's helpful, but like you said, there's so many different elements that interplay there and everyone's got their different difficulties and stuff, so you've really given us a great introduction there. Let's get on with what we're going to talk about. So where do you even want to start with this topic? Because we've got a lot of different elements. Do you want to maybe explain why this is something that you wanted to talk about, why we're interested, why we're chatting about this today?
Okay, so, like, for the purpose of the listeners, basically we did that recording with Zoe talking about body image, eating disorders in the LGBTQIA plus community. And I think it was last year's June-ish. I can't remember. And then you did
I think it might have even been 2 years ago.
Was it 2 years? Oh, yeah, because I was still working from home. So, yeah, it'll be quite a while now. And then you did the whole series in June and for Pride Month. And you were saying how people responded really well to that content. And they were asking if I wanted to come back to talk some more. And when we were thinking about when we can record, it just... We arrive at the idea, like, it's not going to be until November, maybe December, that we're going to be able to record this. And I said, oh, that's really, really good, because, you know, Christmas, eating disorders, body image, but also Christmas and LGBTQIA plus, and the kind of Venn diagram that these four things kind of create, because of the kind of layer of potentially religiosity to Christmas. Some people observe it as a religious holiday. Some people don't. I don't. Well, whereas my family does. So there is, like, a personal little thing that I have in terms of, like, how I relate to the time of year. So, yeah, that's kind of how we came about. And we also were talking about, you know, the barrage of diet culture that's about to hit everybody in preparation for Christmas and then post-Christmas, and all of the weight loss advertising that's going to be happening as soon as Boxing Day is over, or even beforehand, really. So, yeah, that's kind of how this topic came together. It's just all of these things are inevitably coming together and overlapping. So that's why. Yeah. So basically my thinking was, okay, so we have this idea that Christmas is a holiday centered around family and food, right? And then you have this additional layer of religiosity. And we also know that, for example, rejection and estrangement from family is really hard around this time of year. And that sort of situation is more common in the LGBTQIA plus community, where there literally is research that, you know, Christmas is a religious celebration and all of that. But there is research that shows that, for example, religious people tend to hold more negative attitudes towards transgender people compared to non-religious counterparts. So if you have people who are observing Christmas as a religious observation, so it's not just, you know, a time for family and presents and gathering and food and all of that stuff. If you just look at it from that angle, if you happen to, for example, be, I don't know, trans, non-binary, gay, whatever, and you are in a situation where your family is not welcoming, where they are not validating you, where they are rejecting you, where they are telling you that you are wrong or confused or whatever, and they want you to be somebody else, that level of rejection is part of minority stress. So for the purposes of listeners, the idea of minority stress, that it's chronically high levels of stress experienced by stigmatized and minoritized groups. So if we think about everybody, you know, experiences a variety of different pressures in terms to, you know, their body image, eating disorders, that sort of stuff. But when it comes to minoritized groups, there are some unique factors, and that rejection by family, that estrangement, as well as things like homophobia, stigma, prejudice, discrimination, all of these kind of unique factors related to minoritized groups are what contributes to their kind of chronic levels of stress as a result of their identity. And particularly around time where, you know, there is the expectation in December that you are going to see your family, that you're going to be spending time together. So for some people, that's not an option. And that kind of lack of support, if you, for example, struggling in recovery, could be potentially worsening people's symptoms or behaviors. So like, I genuinely see it as a really risky time of year for not just anybody in recovery, but specifically people in recovery or who are struggling with eating disorders or their body image or gender dysphoria, because of just all of these factors coming together. So that's what fascinates me, basically. I didn't find any research on it. I think I'm going to have to like design a study about specifically investigating Christmas and body image and eating disorders in LGBTQIA+, honestly.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. I love doing this podcast. One of my favorite things that I have come to realize is, this has happened so many times, I've been doing a podcast with a researcher and they're like, I don't think there is actually anything on that. I'm going to do a study on that. And I'm like, oh God, this is so great that you can, you've got like that access to do that. But I was just thinking there when you were saying about minority individuals and those that might not have the support. And so much of the time when we talk about Christmas and strategies of navigating Christmas with an eating disorder or in eating disorder recovery, it's always, you know, have somebody that you can talk to, or, you know, have a family member that you can call out if it's difficult, or, you know, plan, plan, like, and, you know, our Christmas episode that I did with Deirdre a few weeks ago, she's talking about support from parents, and we do talk about all of that. And for people that have the support of their parents, that advice is, you know, that's phenomenal, and it's great that the parents can then all come together. But then what do people do that, and I'm not asking, this is almost a rhetorical question, but you may have some ideas, you know, people that have that added level of difficulty in, I can't plan ahead because I've not seen my family all year, let's say, but I'm expected to come together with them at Christmas. There's potential comments around body image. I can't ask them openly, please don't do that. It's kind of, where are those people then left in terms of their recovery?
Chosen family, basically. You know, your friends, a lot of people do Friendsmas anyway, you know, around Christmas, because they spend the actual Christmas Day Boxing Day with the family, and they, around those days, they go and see their friends and people that they know, you know, related by blood and things. But, you know, in the rainbow community, the idea of chosen family is already established. And I personally don't think anybody would find themselves in a situation where a friend of theirs, regardless of, you know, how close they are, maybe it's just an acquaintance, reaches out and says, look, I'm going to be alone at Christmas. What are your plans? I cannot imagine the situation where somebody goes like, no, you can't come over to mine. But again, maybe I'm living in La La Land. I have done this in the past. Where
I think that's, you know, you've got friends.
Yeah, like there are people like,
quote unquote, friends.
Honestly, I've done this before in the past where I have had people over because I knew they were going to be on their own. And like, nobody wants people to be alone at Christmas. And I think everybody pretty much would be really, really understanding. Additionally, if you do happen to, for example, be religious and you want to observe it as a religious kind of celebration, there are many events happening where people are coming together, you know, having the mulled wine, going, you know, to the carols and mass and whatever, however people are celebrating around these days, that, you know, putting yourself out there might be the hardest part. But if you are needing that sort of connection, that would be something that you can around this time of year do and actually probably have higher chance of being welcomed and being incorporated by people, you know, if you just turn up by yourself. I would also say literally everybody should check with people that they know and ask, what are your plans for Christmas? You know, you don't ask them like, are you going to be alone or anything? You just ask them, what are your plans for Christmas? Yeah. I do that with pretty much everybody that I know, but I don't know what the plans are. And if they say, you know, oh, I'm not doing anything, it's like, oh, do you want to do something? Because, you know, maybe they're choosing not to do anything and they're perfectly fine with that. But if it's just like, do you want to come over to mine and watch movies and, you know, we can hang out? I'm more than happy to do that. And I'm pretty sure most of us now and again feel alone and feel lonely and wish to reach out. And chances are that if you do reach out, people will welcome you and, you know, accept you into their time and their plans. So that's a couple of things you can do. Your chosen family, reach out to them. I would also recommend that other people, like I said, reach out to the people that they know and see, check in with them, basically. I do recommend doing Friendsmas and stuff like that, going to like community events and things that are happening in like, you know, local parishes and churches and stuff like that. Why not? And also, I would check out what the different eating disorder organizations, for example, are doing. If your specific issue is an eating disorder and you feel like you need that support and you say, I am not close to anybody, there is nobody I can reach out to get that support. There are so many wonderful charities that are doing some incredible work. Maybe they'll not have anybody, you know, available live for you to call and chat or whatever, but they may have some resources to look at, you know. And it is about that sort of planning, like, okay, am I going to need a distraction that particular day? What do I do that makes me relaxed, that takes my mind off things? You know, do I want to go for a walk? Do I want to read? Do I want to, you know, what do I want to do that does make me happy? You know, actually, like self-care, basically, just plan for it. And obviously, by all means, check out like the local charities and all of the in kind of national charities that we have. So Red Can, we could maybe, I don't know, pop a link to the Red Can, the Alliance of Eating Disorder Charities, for people to check out. That's kind of very basic, but I think that might help.
I don't think it is basic. I mean, I think it is basic, but I think we often forget the basics because we almost approach this season with so much fear and so much dread that we forget how to kind of just go about things, you know, in a normal way rather than making it like this big massive thing. And I think that is Christmas in general, it is a day, and actually we blow it out of proportion so much so, make ourselves feel really guilty what we do, what we don't do. And I think also we just make so many assumptions. And I was thinking that as you were talking there, when you said, you know, I think I personally, one, I assume everybody will have a plan for Christmas. So, you know, it's more, well, you know, for me, it's like, oh, what are you doing for Christmas? As in, you know, what's your plan? Not, oh, I'm, you know, checking in the background that you do have a plan. And secondly, assuming that everyone wants to celebrate Christmas, like I have some friends that live just down the road, and I'm actually going to be at home for the first, like at my house rather than my parents' house for the first time this year. And last year they made like Christmas themed burgers and just got drunk. They didn't go and see their family. They didn't, you know, they didn't, that's not what they wanted to do. And I love that because like you said, with Friendsmas, they made it their own, and you might have pressures from family members to go and see them. But I think it is really important to make sure that you do what you want to do as well. And whatever that is, to fit that in as well, so that you are enjoying yourself.
Yeah, like this is the thing. I used to host Christmas at our house when we lived up north. And you know, I'm a good cook. I've done a turk ducken from scratch in the past. I've done a comedy sized cartoon style ham, you know, all of that sort of stuff, and you know, multiple size, all of this stuff. But I also in the past few years have done things like have KFC at Christmas. A couple of years back, I did lasagna three ways. So we had vegan, vegetarian and meat versions and baked fresh bread to go with it. And you don't have to have the Christmas food, right? You can have your safe food. You can have whatever sticks to your plan. if you are having body image issues or you are struggling because you are maybe trying to move away from like dieting, you still have time to think about what do these situations mean to me? What's my relationship to all of it? Like, is this food at Christmas food that I'm actually enjoying, or am I only eating because it's expected of me? You know, do I enjoy mulled wine, or is it because somebody handed me a glass? And it's perfectly fine to say things like, you know, oh, no, thank you, I'm going to have something else, you know, or, you know, if you're turning up and you are on a, let's say, a plan from your nutritionist because you are in recovery, I don't think anybody should be mad at you for saying, I'm bringing my own thing that's sticking to my plan. I am going to see what I can try. You know, it's asking for some leniency in our expectations of ourselves and hoping that the people that we're spending Christmas with are caring enough about us to be supportive, whether they are your friends or your family or whoever, to allow whatever is best for, you know, your recovery or working through, like, you know, untangling yourself from diet culture or whatever. So there are things we can do, and like, yeah, you don't have to do it the way it's expected of you to be done.
And that, I think, is so important. We have all of these kind of ideas around what Christmas should be. But I think one of the things I love so much about Christmas is actually like making my own traditions. And I keep saying that to my parents this year because they're coming to us rather than us going to them, because I've got cats now, and my cats do not like going in the car. So I was like, Mum, Dad, you're coming here. But I said, you know, how exciting. My mum was getting all upset that, you know, oh, we won't have Christmas in the family home. I'm like, but how exciting that we're going to be making new traditions, which I think is personally really exciting. And something else that you just mentioned there that I wanted to pick up on, and I think I've been trying to think about what the best approach to this is, and I think you just knocked it on the nail on the head, in that I've been trying, a lot of people have been saying, you know, with in terms of eating sort of recovery, plan, like have your safe foods and this, that and the other. And I've been like, oh, but this is actually such a great time to challenge. And I think this is what I'm going to do anyway. I've just decided, as you said it there, I'm going to bring or going to have what I need to have in my day, my day-to-day life. So that is the minimum, that is my minimal viable product that I'm allowed to have. And then everything else that I want to try will be on top of that, because I think you could very easily slip into the you know, yeah, of course I'll have the roast dinner and then you just have a plate of carrots, or of course I'll have the buffet but then you only touch like the crudité or whatever. So I think that's really an important take home for me, is to make sure you've got the kind of basics and then you can add on to that, and you'll thank yourself so much later.
Yeah. One of the things, I can't remember which amazing book I read it from. It may have been from It's Always Been Ours, but don't quote me on that. Where essentially it's not about taking things away from your repertoire. It's about adding things on top of what's already there. And so having that sort of plan B of like, this is a thing that I know I can have, that I should have. And on top of that, I will, you know, try a bite of this, you know. And if I end up enjoying it, carry on, you know, and see how you feel about it. We need to remember that, you know, food is not just nutrition. It's not just fuel, right? And especially when it comes to these family gatherings where the food is being, you know, part of a culture and part of a celebration, that we have it as bonding and we have it as a family experience or friends experience, or like this intimacy that you share with your close ones. And it is for, like you said, you're creating new kind of traditions, but also it's for creating new memories. So imagine, you know, somebody's bringing, you know, a dessert you haven't had, and you may think, oh, you know, I don't know if I'm going to like it and if I'm going to enjoy it. Talk, you know, and it's not just for people in eating disorder recovery. It's not for people who are having body image. For anybody, when presented with a new food, is going to need to establish, is this something that I'm willing to eat? Does it have ingredients that I enjoy? Does it have stuff I'm allergic to or whatever, you know? So if it just so happens that you say, oh, what is this dessert? You ask your auntie and your auntie tells you, and it doesn't sound all that appetizing to you, or, you know, maybe has an ingredient you don't like or whatever, it's still a great opportunity to talk. It's like, oh, is this something you make regularly, you know? And maybe it turns out that, you know, that's a recipe she got from grandma, you know? And you can have a lovely conversation about the food without having to actually eat any of it. And you can politely say, oh, thank you for making this, but, you know, it doesn't sound like, you know, there's the right ingredients that I enjoy, you know? Or if you find yourself wanting it, it's like, oh, can I have the recipe? Like, how lovely would that be? And you can just, you know, people love sharing recipes. Yeah. I'm one of those people, so.
Absolutely. And I think that's the nice thing, rather than just dismissing it immediately, is kind of, you know, having a conversation around it. And you might find as well that initially your anxiety peaks and you think, I can't possibly do that. And then after you've had a nice conversation, a bit of a chit chat, you know, you've distracted yourself a little bit. It's like, okay, yeah, maybe I can have a bit. And how nice will that be for the other person? But if it doesn't feel manageable, then that's also okay as well. So I think I wanted to talk a bit more about body image, particularly like around this time of year, because I know there are so many events, things like that go on. But I think the biggest thing, and I feel like this translates as well to like LGBTQIA plus and stuff, in that comments around body image, particularly around Christmas and the New Year, seem to be rife. Like, you know, it's whether it's, oh, that dress looks lovely, or, you know, what have you, that which is a nice thing to say, obviously, but it does make it difficult. What sort of advice would you give to people, you know, to, if those conversations are difficult for them, particularly if their family are not people that they're maybe the closest to, or that they haven't seen for a while?
Yeah, so yeah, that you're totally right in that it is rife, because maybe you'll be seeing people you haven't seen for a while and your body has changed in one way or another. And they may comment on that, because unfortunately, that's part of the society that we've created. So one of the things that I do when I go visit my family, not around Christmas, because I don't do Christmas with them, if they comment on, they say, oh, you look great, you know, oh, you know, you it looks like you've lost a little bit of weight, because that's a concern for my family, is the fact that I am not thin like I used to be. I will always turn the attention to, like, yeah, these pants are great, aren't they? Like, they are so comfy. They're so comfortable. Like, oh my, I got them on there, like I said, and they genuinely changed the topic entirely from talking about my appearance that's to do with my body to do something with my clothing choices. I mean, you can, you know, put up a hard boundary and just be like, can we not talk about my body? I'm not in a good place about this. This is not something I want to talk about. So obviously it depends on, like, the relationship you have with the person, depends on how assertive you are and how much you can self-advocate for yourself. It might be that if you do have a safe person in the family, that you know, have a conversation with them about, like, what can we do if, you know, people comment on my body? Can I come and find you? And can you help me, you know, process this thing? It is rife around now. It's always rife that people comment on appearance. You know, you have my permission to just be like, I'm not having this conversation, and walk away. You know, and a lot of people would consider that rude, but that's just you setting boundaries. And again, it might be worth having some sort of preparation with whoever you're spending Christmas with, where you may send out, I don't know, a group text or whatever, and just be like, hey guys, as you know, I'm struggling with X, Y, and Z. I know this might be unusual, but I would really appreciate it if we could not talk about the way I look. It's really triggering for me. I know you may not understand this, but please, can we just not? And can we have a nice time, you know, talking about anything else? And maybe that will work. Maybe we'll start drama. God knows.
Yeah, maybe it will start drama. I know for me last year, oh, wow, it was an absolute catalyst of drama. It definitely can be a catalyst, but I think, like you say, you have to do what's right for you. And I think the thing that I find difficult often is, you know, not wanting to come across rude, because yeah. I think sometimes people do say things that maybe are, they're meant with good intention, but they come out in the wrong way, and then it's almost that awkward, you know. I've had it multiple times where you're sat at dinner and then someone says something and you're like, oh, like, you know, they don't really want to talk about that right now, and then they're like, oh, but why not, and then make a yeah. scene of it. And so I think that's the bit that I just do, like, I struggle with, because it's like, once the comment has been said, there's no going back. Like, it's been said, and no, even if I say I don't want to talk about that right now, it's still said it, it's still in my brain, it's still now manifesting in my brain, and then it's how you move on from that so you can yeah. actually try and have a nice time rather than just sitting with that inside.
Yeah, so this is where, like, maybe having some sort of distraction ready would be good.
Yeah.
Again, preparation, and just being like, okay, if it so happens that I get in my head and this comment is now living rent free in there, what can I possibly do? And because you will be there with, you know, other people, and this is weird, and this is me just making it up on the spot right now, you know, the 12 Days of Christmas song, do your own version uh-huh. where you count, like, let's say, you know, one lovely partner, two great parents, three awesome siblings, and just count and just distract your brain away from the thing that you're thinking of. Like, count to like 12. Can you think of like 12 awesome things in your life, and do that to just distract yourself? It's kind of like when you do three things you can see, three things you can hear when you're having a panic attack situation, but just yeah. focusing on something positive, something like maybe more based on appreciating good things in life. It's like, yes, I have one awesome job, I have two brilliant cats, sorry, I have four brilliant cats, you know, and just distract yourself that way, and just like appreciate yourself, like, yeah, you know, this uncle made a comment about whatever, but you know, I am totally like rocking this dress, I've got one awesome dress, I have two brilliant shoes, and you can yeah. just completely distract yourself. Like, feel free to blank people, go inside your head and just start counting up to 12 awesome things you have.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. That's like,
I just made that
the
up.
Best technique. No, I know you did, and I absolutely love it. I was just thinking in my head about what mine will be. I'm hoping this year that I have avoided triggering parties, but you never know, do you? So I'll definitely keep that one under my hat. And I think that, but I think that is the thing, isn't it? It's whether you're doing the 12 Days of Christmas or whatever, it's having something in your head or in the back of your mind that you can pull out. You don't necessarily need anything physical, because I think sometimes if you need something physical, that can be then distressing, you know, if you're sat having a meal and you've not got that thing with you, or another person, you know, you might not want to make it obvious. So I really love that 12 days. 12 is hard though, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
I think I'd be sat there like counting, oh, what do I have nine of, like, yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah, that will be,
that is so true,
be
yeah.
bothering you so much to try and figure yeah. that out. What do I have nine of?
Yeah, like 4 hours later, I'll still be sat at the dinner table doing my 12 Days of Christmas, and my whole family, oh my God, like, Hannah, what are you doing? Like, I'm only at nine.
like on Friends, when they were trying to name all of the states, and it was like, I'm not gonna yeah. have any Thanksgiving dinner until I've named them all.
Oh God! You know, on Christmas Day, I'm gonna send you my 12 days of whatever. I'm gonna do it as a little strategy.
Everybody,
after I've eaten my meal.
Everybody, like, tweet at me and tag me in your 12 awesome things.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Here are my 12 awesome techniques that I used to distract myself. I'll now list all 12.
Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna be having a very quiet day, so might as well distract me.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. Awesome. And okay, I've completely lost our train of thought even where we were now, because that technique has made me so happy to think about.
It's going to be hard. It's not, none of it is ever easy, right? And it's going to be hard because, like you mentioned, like, people could be well-meaning, especially if they, for example, know that you have been struggling or you are in recovery or whatever, and they may be well-meaning and they'll say something like, oh, you look so healthy, which can be so triggering to people to be told that they look healthy, because it's the opposite of what they want to look like, you know. And it might be really, really well-meaning. And sometimes it might just be a thing, you know, if it's something like you look good, you look well, you look healthy, you know, if it's meant as a compliment, it's like, thank you. And just be like, how has your year been?
Yeah.
What's your expectations for, you know, next year? And just try and, you know, move on. If it's somebody you have a good relationship with, you know, maybe it's a good time to have a conversation. You know, you're full of dessert and nice food and everything's relaxed and things. So maybe it's a good time to like have a conversation around that time. Why not? It just depends on your situation. Obviously, there's no generalization to be made. But the next thing that obviously is on my mind is what's going to be happening after Christmas and how quickly we start getting dieting advertising. It's again something to be mindful of and perhaps prepare and kind of check in with yourselves, like, oh, I saw this thing, how am I feeling, is this something that is useful or helpful to me? No, okay. Perhaps you can block off the weight loss content on Instagram, for example. Now, I don't remember the instructions off the top of my head right now, but it can be done where you can block it in the settings. On Facebook, you can, you know, try and personalize your feed, for example, like pressing buttons and saying like show less of this sort of advertising. If this is not working for you, it might be, again, worth trying to figure out, can I get any like professional support with this? Are there any organizations in my area or, you know, online that already have some advice that I can use and incorporate into my day to day life with, you know, how to cope with it? And also, my thing is always like, be critical. It's like, why is this being shown to me? Because they want my money. Right.
Yeah.
They want my money. Yeah. Me going on the diet, me buying whatever product they're trying to sell is money in their pocket. And, you know, again, you have my permission. Be fully cynical about it and just be like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it makes me really angry and mad and sad, actually, because we are given all of this content pre-Christmas of food, like if you're not getting involved in the food, then your Christmas is just an absolute shambles, and what's the point?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you've got to have all of this food, and then as soon as it's done, you then got all this weight loss, like, oh well, now it's January, and like, oh, don't you feel guilty for all the food that you've eaten at Christmas? And I think my thing with it is, as somebody that for the past 14 years every single Christmas has had an eating disorder, I've not had one Christmas where I've overindulged. But I still get the messages of, you've overindulged, therefore you should be on a diet. And it's that double whammy of, okay, I already feel guilty because I've eaten slightly out of my comfort zone. Now I've got all of this information telling me it's actually fine for you to be on a diet. And I think I completely agree with, you know, personalizing your social media, trying to avoid these things at all costs. But ultimately, you probably are going to see something, and it is probably going to be quite triggering. And what I have just had to do is to say to myself, right, stay in your own lane. That is, you know, that's targeted to, yeah, maybe it is targeted to you, but it's targeted to all these different people. If they want to go on a diet, that is their prerogative, that's their life, they can do that. But you do not need to do that. And I feel sorry, yes, that those people do feel that they need to go on a diet, but for my own sake and in a selfish way, I have to just put myself in a box and say, this is my box, and there's no dieting in here.
No, absolutely. And there were a couple of things that occurred to me. First of all, is I always pay attention to how quickly after Christmas every sort of decoration disappears from shops and stuff, and how quickly the Easter bunnies appear in the chocolate form in the supermarkets. It's just something that amuses me quite a bit. But another thing that I was thinking about was that we might, again, need to just challenge ourselves a little bit and be like, this is not something that I ever probably will be able to get rid of. And just be like, okay, if I see one, what am I going to do? You know, and come up with a couple of things you're comfortable with, such as, you know, oh, I'm going to just, you know, close that social media. If I go to the office and there is diet talk, what am I going to do? You know, can I walk away from my desk at work and not be part of the conversation? Or am I comfortable enough putting up my hand and being like, hey, guys, you know, this diet talk is making me uncomfortable. Feel free to disclose if you are in a situation where you can, you know, maybe even say, look, I'm in recovery from eating disorder and this is difficult for me. And like, I know that, you know, we are responsible for our own triggers, really. But it just depends on like what relationship do you have with your coworkers. But unfortunately, diet talk is normalized and it is probably going to be happening. So it might be like, you know, have that conversation with your colleagues. And if it's not something you're comfortable with, ask if your boss will allow you to, I don't know, have headphones on so you can not listen to this. There'll be sales after Christmas. Buy cheap noise cancelling headphones. The other thing that that occurred to me was also that a lot of this sort of Christmassy going out is going to be happening in places that have calories on menus. So that can potentially, again, be a trigger that we cannot control. But do remember that the different food establishments are required to have calorie-free menus and that you can ask for one and they should be accommodating you. So that's another thing to kind of keep in mind.
Yeah, no, all absolutely brilliant suggestions. And I think it just completely depends on where you're at in your recovery and how confident you feel and how close you are to your co-workers. Yeah. But ultimately, you know, if you do feel that you can speak out about it, one thing that I've always said, and I've, you know, rattled on about it so much on this podcast, is that by me speaking about my experience, I really hope that, you know, somebody will hear that and think, oh, you know, she's struggling. That's like, it's okay for me to say it out loud as too. Like, I don't have to keep this inside. And I actually did a couple of years ago, I did a talk at work about eating disorder awareness. And it was one of the like lunch and learn things that we did. And I walked out to people that had been in my talk talking about the latest diet they were on. And I just very nicely said to them, like, you know that this is something that's going on in your life at the moment, but would it be possible to not have these conversations in such an open space? Because for some people that could be really triggering. And I tried to bite my tongue of like, we just come out of a frigging eating disorder awareness talk. But I just, for me, I feel now I can't not say anything because I know that little old me wouldn't have said anything and would have been distressed by that comment and internalized it. But if she'd have heard somebody else say, oh guys, do you mind not having that conversation, I would have been like, oh my god, like, it's okay to ask people to not have those conversations. And I actually think, you know, I was just thinking there as well about when you said not having the calories on the menu, people would probably be quite relieved that you, like, if you asked for that, they'd probably be quite like, oh god, yeah, I'd like one of those as well, even if they've not got an eating disorder, because ultimately it's Christmas. No one wants to see the calories on the menu at any point of the year, especially at Christmas. You just want to relax, have a nice time, be with friends, colleagues, family, whatever, without the stress of a number just burning into your eyes saying, yeah, look how guilty you should feel.
Yeah. But that again ties back to the thing that you said about the advertising, for example, is going to assume you've overindulged. You know, and
yeah,
it's,
yeah,
people give themselves this permission to like eat more and drink more and let themselves go and like let loose of this control, blah blah. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to do that. You can just eat what you enjoy, whatever your status is.
Yeah, it's, but why do we need to have this aspect of, you know, letting yourself go and letting go of control if your day-to-day life is you eating the food that you enjoy and you continue with that over Christmas? Then it's no different, and then your January doesn't need to come around and you don't need to be putting yourself in a massive place of restriction. It's, you know, that's kind of the basics of how we should eat, but we can't seem to grasp that concept.
Yeah, it is, again, like, it's moralizing the food and the eating behaviors and stuff like that. And like if you want to indulge, you totally can. If you are, you know, following the advice of a health professional supporting you, by all means do that. If you want to have like a, you know, mix and match of that, do that. You know, it's, you don't have to do what's expected of you. You don't have to have the food that's expected of you. You can say no to going out. You know, I know people who are exhausted. They had like a week off work for Christmas and they come back to work more tired because they, you know, every single day they are somewhere and they're traveling and they're doing things and they are tired after having a break. You don't have to.
And I think that's the thing. I remember as a child, you know, my Christmas would be like every day would be with a different family because I've got like separated grandparents and stuff. So it'd be different days and everything was just like tiring and chaotic. But one thing that I do really remember was, and my mum won't mind me saying this because she's very open about how her relationship with food has changed over the years. We used to go to Tesco and get so much food and put it all in the utility room, and we were not allowed to go into the utility room until we had broken up for Christmas. Once we'd broken up for Christmas, there were certain things we couldn't eat until Christmas Day, but it was basically like a free-for-all. And that food had to be gone by the end of the Christmas break. Like if that food wasn't gone, then it was being thrown away. Like we had to eat that food, and obviously you didn't want to throw it away because that would be wasting food. So every day was like, eat as much as you possibly can. I look back now and I think, what on earth? Like, what was that? Like, we were force feeding ourselves all of this food that realistically, like, yeah, it was nice. But by the end of it, after your like seventh carpet picnic of having a buffet, it's kind of like, oh, I don't want to eat any more cheese now.
It is weird. Everybody has that sort of this is for Christmas kind of food that you cannot touch, and then the moment it's available, like I for some reason the thing that went into my mind was a bottle of Coke. Like that's for that's the bottle of Coke for Christmas. Don't drink that one, because like my parents don't have like fizzy soft drinks. It's just not something that the family drinks, but I do. And my mum very much disapproves of the fact that I have a serious long-term commitment to Dr. Pepper. But basically, yeah, they would always have a couple of Coke bottles for the Christmas time. And yeah, when we opened it once and started drinking it before, it's like, but this was for Christmas. I have to go buy a new one. It's like, the shops are open. You can get another one. It's fine.
You know, that's literally my mum. It would be, what would it be? Crackers. Crackers, definitely. They're the Christmas crackers. You can't eat them.
Don't judge that.
KP nuts. Yeah, absolutely. And all the Christmas cheese as well. Dad would only be allowed to have Cathedral City until it was Christmas, and then he could go mad on his cheese platter. But anyway.
It's weird arbitrary rules that are just not necessary, really.
Yeah, which I think Christmas is, that is Christmas, isn't it? It's weird arbitrary rules that for some reason as a society we feel like we need to follow. But I think I'm going to make that my challenge this year, actually, is to do something that I'm kind of like, oh God, it's a bit outlandish for Christmas. But it's actually something that I really want to do, like with my family or with my partner or whatever, to kind of, you know, break the mold a little bit.
Yeah, it's fine to break tradition. So, for example, in Poland, we celebrate Christmas Eve. And on Christmas Eve, you don't have meat. The main source of protein is fish, and traditionally it's carp. But I don't know if you've ever eaten carp, and I personally do not like it. I'm not a big fish person anyway. It's got very distinctive taste, and as children, we did not like it. So why is it okay for my mom to go and have another fish alternative for us, and that breaking of tradition is fine, but you saying I want this thing added to the table because it's my safe food is not fine, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, we can totally break traditions. Why not? Like, we are adults, we're allowed, right? Yeah. You can do what you want. It's funny that I think about it, because again, my family is very religious, and they observe Christmas as a Christian holiday, and it's very tied to their faith. And one of the parts of it is that Christmas Eve, you have your meal in the evening, but you fast up until then. You don't eat. And it literally just occurred to me, like, how potentially triggering that could be if you adhere to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember not enjoying that as a kid. I was like, I'm hungry, I want to eat. And, like, you have this feast that's been cooking and smelling lovely and I can't have any of it. Like, that's torturous.
And then you eat it all so quickly because you're so hungry, probably don't enjoy a mouthful of it, and then you're left feeling horrifically full.
Oh, and you know what? Yeah. You also eat it fast because also in Poland, we get our Christmas gifts after dinner. So we get them on the evening on the 24th. We don't have to wait until Christmas morning. So that's a tradition we follow in my house. We get our presents for the 24th, not 25th.
But you absolutely ram your food down your throat so you can get your presents.
Well, we are adults, so we do what we want. We can open our presents while we are eating. I'm not having to wait until my parents tell me I'm allowed because we are breaking the mold. We do what we want.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I think that should be everybody's Christmas motto this year. Christmas 2023, breaking the mold.
Do you know what?
Or maybe that's what we could call the episode.
There you go. It's basically make Christmas Day your mental health day, you know?
Yeah,
like
I love it.
My
Christmas
is gonna be my self-care. I'm gonna get a face mask, I'm gonna get my jammies, I'm gonna get lovely food, and I'm gonna try and relax because I've been very stressed, and I'm not gonna like be pressured into stuff.
That sounds great. That sounds like how the day should be. I've got obviously, you know, I've got cats, and I get all the adverts from, I can't remember which, it's one, I think it's Cats Protection or something, and they're doing this craft for cats thing, and you've got like a felting kit to make cat baubles, so that's what I will be doing on Christmas Day.
Do you do the felting with the actual cat hair you collect off your cat? Is that gross?
No, I really hope not. Well, I haven't, my cats are so fluffy, I absolutely could do that, but I haven't been collecting, so...
I have four cats, so yeah, I get it. They're part of the reason why we hang out at home on Christmas, because they're really good company.
Well, that's the reason I'm here. Yeah. I said to my partner, I was like, I'm not having Christmas without them. Absolutely not. Them opening their Christmas presents will be the highlight. I now understand what people are like with kids now. Like, oh, like I want to be with my kids on Christmas. Like them opening their presents brings me joy. I'm that with my cats.
Yeah. Yeah, my cats are going to get their own Christmas gifts and an extra serving of Dreamers and catnip. That's how you do it.
Yes. Yes. Well, I think I'm vegetarian, but I think on Christmas Eve, our tradition normally is to have like smoked salmon and stuff. And I do have that at Christmas. So I think the boys will be getting some smoked salmon.
There you go. Just share with the family. Can I plug a study, seeing as we're chatting?
Yes.
So basically, one of my good friends, Dan, is doing his PhD, and particularly this study is looking at the relationship between physical activity and mental health well-being between cisgender and transgender participants, and that includes non-binary participants. So essentially what they're looking at is perceived barriers to physical activity and how it impacts people's mental well-being, how it impacts the relationship with you know, movement and stuff. And it's a really brief 15 to 20 minute survey. So if I could like ask you to share the link, that'll be awesome, because we are looking for some extra people for this one.
Send me the link and I'll pop it in the comments, along with our link to the eating disorder charity. Yes. And what was the other thing that you said you couldn't remember the details of?
I couldn't remember the instructions for how to block weight loss suggestions on Instagram, but we'll find it. I have it saved.
We'll find all of that. Okay, brilliant. Well, thank you so much. I think that's been such an informative, helpful episode. Have a lovely Christmas doing what you want to do, and happy new year.
Yeah, and you too. And yeah, have a lush time. Enjoy your salmon, enjoy your cats, and all the best for the new year, and chat soon.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.